We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Hey friends, it's Ian from TV's The Recovering Gleek : A Glee Podcast. When Lena and I first decided to make this podcast, we quickly realized we had literally zero idea of how to make that happen. Thankfully, a friend of ours recommended the podcasting platform Anchor. Anchor is free. It has all of the tools you need to record and edit your podcast from your phone or computer. You can even add songs from Spotify into it. And the absolute most amazing thing about Anchor is that they will distribute your podcast for you. So anywhere that you listen to Recovering Gleek, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever weird third-party app you're using, it is there because Anchor put it there. And the icing on the cake is that you can make money from your podcast through Anchor with no minimum listenership. All you have to do is record an ad, which is why I am recording an ad right now, because I want money very badly. It is everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Lena?
Ian?
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm tired.
Me too. Yesterday, Lena and I watched a movie together, and I fell asleep within 20 minutes and then just was twitching on the couch for the rest of the movie.
It was honestly frightening. Woo! Woo! It was also, like, not a movie that one would, like, fall asleep to. It's freaking Thor freaking Ragnarok.
Thor Fraggle Rock. I mean, but it's a movie that I would fall asleep to because true. I've seen it so many times. And I'm like, I know this movie, like, the back
you're
of
like,
my hand.
You're like, piss off, ghost, you know.
Yeah. Goodbye, went to sleep.
Goodbye.
And then I slept for not very long, and then I went home, and then I slept for 11 hours.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you ever take melatonin?
Yes.
I sometimes have a tough time taking melatonin because when I take melatonin, I want to sleep for 15 hours. It is bad. I have melatonin gummies and sometimes I'm like, should I just take half of this? Because I woke up this morning and I went to bed at like 11:30 last night. I woke up at 9 and I was like, I am still groggy. So mm-hmm. I freaking slept until 11.
Good for you.
I know, but like, come on. I went to bed early so I didn't have to freaking do that.
Yeah.
I also, the big ADHD dilemma of my whole life is I have a show at 2. I should be able to get things done before that, right? Mm-hmm. But I never do. Mm-hmm. I can't get anything done before like freaking 1 o'clock when I have to be at the theater. My gosh.
That's why I don't like matinees.
Yeah.
Because they're directly in the center of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I wake up, I'm always like, oh, I only have 3 hours, so I have to be at the matinee. I only have 2 hours and I can't like focus on anything
else. Yeah, but when your show is at like 8 o'clock, you can like do something at 5.
Yeah, exactly. Like I will start focusing on the show at like 5:36. Not at 5:30/6, at 5:36.
Literally, yes, I knew what you meant.
Like, it's 5:36, trying to think about the show tonight.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Time to focus. Focus up. Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well.
How are you?
So tired.
Yeah, I hear you.
But, you know, maybe that'll make this episode extra special.
I know.
Let's hit it.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Ian Allred, and I am Gleek.
Hello. My name is Lena Knatzer. and I am a Gleek.
Welcome to the podcast, Recovering Gleek, Sleepy Time Edition. Put this on when you're trying to sleep at night, yes. And our vices will lull you to sleep.
Could you imagine?
This is not a sleepy time podcast.
No, it is not. We both have like voices that I think would be bad to fall asleep to.
I think I have a very grating voice.
A whatty voice? A grating?
A very grating voice.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's one that relaxes anyone who listens to it. But I do think that laugh is very relaxing.
Oh, so comforting. So comforting. Like, ooh, Jared Leto's, Jared Leto's like, Joker.
Ooh, it's ooh. Like a warm blanket. Nothing can harm me like, now.
I feel safe and wanted.
Oh, everyone just record that. Listen to it when you're like really going through a hard time.
Yeah, absolutely.
It'll just make you feel protected.
Like some people like put on like an ASMR video when they're having a panic attack. They can just like play just that sound of like, you know, be grounded in reality again.
Uh-huh. 100%. All right.
Okay. We talked about going to get Chili's the other day and we totally didn't.
We talked about Applebee's and we still, yeah, we said Applebee's.
Wait.
Lena's referring to our episode on Purple Piano Project, I think it was.
I think so.
We lied to all of you. We didn't get Applebee's afterwards.
We totally didn't. What happened? I think we were just...
Well, what happened is that friend of the podcast, Nataline, walked into my apartment and then we ended up talking to her for so long until that Applebee's closed.
Worth it. It was good to see her. But we did just go to... We got Chili's takeout. Mm-hmm. Thinking I totally was like, oh, this will renew me. I got some potatoes.
You're like, ooh, heavy comfort foods. This is going to put me full of energy. It's not going to make me sleepy.
Freaking hell, when you say it like that. How are you? I already asked you that.
Let's just go in the full circle. But yes, we did just eat a lot of Chili's. Hear me out. Just like we said about Applebee's, Chili's is good. I don't want to hear it. Sure, maybe it's not high quality. My taste buds don't know the difference. And my wallet for sure does know the difference. And the difference is that Chili's is cheap.
You know what your wallet knows the difference of?
Not having a debit card in it?
Yeah. I have paid for all of Ian's meals for the last like couple of weeks. You Venmo me before we even leave the establishment.
True, true.
It's truly not a big deal. It's just funny.
I lost my sweet, sweet debit card. I turned it off. And I have just been living off of Lena Knatzer's kindness and Venmoing her for all of my food. All right. You want to talk about Glar?
No.
Okay, what do you want to talk about?
Glee.
Ugh.
I know.
Do we have to? I was really excited about Glar.
Okay, we can talk about Glar.
Okay. Do you want to get some Glarks?
Please.
All right.
Oh yeah, it's time for the Glarks.
Hi everyone. So this is the Glar episode, Arjar and Arf. Can you imagine if I did the whole podcast like this?
Everyone would be like, frankly kill you.
This is the funniest episode ever. I'm recommending it to all of my friends and we would win awards.
Yeah.
This is... the episode Asian F. Everyone, welcome. Have a seat. Take out your notebooks, please. There will be a test
there
after.
There will be a test.
It aired on October 4th, 2011. It is the third episode of season 3. It is the 47th Glee episode overall. It was written by...
Ian Brennan.
Correct.
I looked it up.
Did you see who directed it?
I did.
Lena's favorite.
Dude, my fave.
Alfonso Gomez Rejon.
I specifically looked up who wrote this episode because they had the fucking audacity to do a Coldplay song when fucking Brad Falchuk is married to now Miss Goop herself.
Sneaking out with Gwyneth Paltz.
I know. So I was like, I needed to know if it was a...
However, were they still together? Not Brad and Gwyneth, because they are still together.
Yeah.
But were Gwyneth and Coldplay guy still together this time?
I don't know.
Let's check it out. Gwyneth Paltrow, spouse, Chris Martin, divorced in 2016. They still had 5 years. So she had already met Brad Falchuk and she already got the butterflies. But she was like, yeah. I got to stay with Chris. And then 5 years later, she was like, not worth it.
Okay.
Bradley, let's hit it.
Sure.
So at this time, you know, no body, no crime. Is that the name of that song?
It is.
Oh, good for me. Anyways, directed by Alfonso Gómez-Rejón, who we know we love.
We
Alfonso
know Stance we totally only. Love. Hear me out. I literally was thinking, especially there's this shot of Mike dancing that I was like, the quality of this shot is better than a usual shot. And then mm-hmm. finding out it's Alfonso, I was like, are you freaking kidding me? Alfonso Stans only. If you're not an Alfonso Stan, literally get off my fucking podcast because he is the best.
To review, he directed Laryngitis in season one.
Uh-huh.
Come on.
Banger.
He directed Grilled Cheeses, A Very Glee Christmas, and Born This Way in season two. And then spoilers for the rest of the episodes. My Alfonso shot that I was like, I see ya, Alfie, was during the callback when it's mm-hmm. it's Rachel and Mercedes singing the yeah. same song, and it's a shot from behind the director's heads, and every time that you pass a director's yeah. head, uh-huh. whoever is on stage changes.
Yep. Another good shot was the one where it was it's supposed to be them not on stage together, but it just like swings from Rachel to mm-hmm. Mercedes, like they're standing next to each other. I was like, oh, and God. Like,
oh, classic Fonz.
Literally. It's the Fonz. Baby. Seriously, so good.
Come on. Speaking of the Fonz, this Galact was going to come later, but I mean, what a transition. Emma's dad. Emma's parents are in this episode, everyone. Fun fact. Her dad is played by Don Most, who played Ralph Mouth on Happy Days. And Jemma Mays is apparently a very big Happy Days fan.
Aww.
And she was super excited when she heard that he was going to play her dad. And then during the scene where her parents are having dinner with her and Will, she kept breaking and laughing, and then they would have to refilm the scene.
That's so fun.
Anyways, songs in this episode are Spotlight by Jennifer Hudson, sung by Mercedes Jones, with Brittany and Tina on the back up.
Mm-hmm.
Run the World, open parentheses, girls, close parentheses, by Beyonce. Performed by Britney with special guest Santana.
Mm-hmm.
Cool from West Side Story, performed by Mike Chang. Harry Shum Jr. Started taking voice lessons so that he could sing more on Glee. So he'd been working with a vocal coach.
He does a great job.
And this is like his first solo on the show, as in song that he gets to himself.
Yeah.
And first song where he's not, you know, purposely trying to sound bad. Yeah. So good for him.
That's awesome.
Then we got It's All Over from Dreamgirls, performed by Mercedes in the New Directions. This is the third of five Dreamgirls numbers on Glee. The first two were I Am Telling You
mm-hmm.
in Sectional season one
mm-hmm.
and Listen in Audition season two.
Yes.
We say this literally every time a Dreamgirls number is on the show, but it's important to keep saying it. Amber Riley played Effie White in Dreamgirls on the West End, and she won a freaking Olivier. You know what Olivier is? It is British Tony! Ace back, loves.
British Tony! Have we ever made that Ace discovery back before?
And badder than ever. That's why British Tony first entered the culture of this podcast.
Listen, I don't remember anything. That's awesome. That's funny as fuck.
All right, we got British Tony
British
on the mic.
British Tony.
He's gonna give you a rundown of the rest of the songs. Cheerio.
You know, big shout out to our British listeners. My heart goes out to y'all.
Julie, you're dedicated. If this does not make you turn off the podcast,
so sorry, you guys.
We got Out Here on My Own.
Okay,
the
I'm
best
finished.
Is that we are actively being paid to play British people in a show
That's
right now.
That's true. And I think, I don't, frankly, I'm never on stage when you speak. Do you do a good job?
No. I speak truly, it doesn't sound like British Tony, but I speak in a way that no British person actually talks.
Yeah.
Because the character I'm playing is unlike any person who has ever actually existed.
Yes, absolutely.
I do. What is the one line that I say and I'm like, this is not how a person talks? I go, it is too late now. That's what I say. So, British listeners, come see us in Pirates of Penzance. You will not be offended.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, up next, we have Out Here on My Own from Fame, performed by Mercedes and Rachel.
Did you ever see that movie/TV show? I don't really know what Fame is.
I did not. The most
I saw the new Fame movie.
With Kay Panabaker? Or her sister, whose first name I forgot?
Maybe.
I swear one of the Panabaker sisters is in that movie.
I'm looking it up.
I think her sister is Kim. Hold up. One of them, one of the Panabaker sisters, the younger one, worked at Animal Kingdom and Disney World at the same time. Danielle is the other one. Oops.
Oh yeah, Danielle Panabaker. That
Yes.
That sounds like someone. Oh, yeah. Bebe North is in it. And Megan Mullally.
Oh, what? Kay Panabaker worked at Animal Kingdom in Disney World at the same time as I did. And it was my goal to run into her. And then I never did. Is a very non-exciting story.
But oh, fun.
That did happen. I really wanted to see Debbie Berwick. I'm a big Debbie Berwick fan.
I gotta rewatch this movie.
Okay, is Danielle Panabaker in it?
No, Kay Panabaker is.
What?
Yes.
But she retired from acting.
Well, I mean, this is in 2009. After that movie came out,
but still.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyways, out here on my own from the Kay Panabaker classic fame, although I'm pretty sure it's from the 80s one.
Oh my God. Kay Panabaker's last movie was Beverly Hills Chihuahua 3, Viva La Fiesta.
And she wrapped that movie and she was like, I cannot keep doing this.
She's like, this is no more.
Beverly Hills Chihuahua 3 Viva La Fiesta truly killed Kay Panabaker's spirit so bad.
What if it did? I'll feel bad.
I am absolutely never acting again.
I mean, makes sense. I've only seen the first one.
It's not only a Beverly Hills Chihuahua movie, it's the third one. Yeah. I think it's safe to say that it probably made her a little... She probably didn't feel great about making that movie.
I hear you.
All the love to Kay Panabaker. I hope you're taking good care of those animals at Animal Kingdom. Good for you. I don't know if she still works there. Anyways. Then we got Fix You by Coldplay by Mr. Gwyneth Paltrow, sung by Will and the New Directions. This is the first time that Coldplay allowed Glee to use one of their songs.
Wow.
Because they wanted to use Viva La Vida in the pilot. Will was going to sing it. When he decided to become an accountant, and Coldplay said, don't think so. And so then he sang Leaving on a Jet Plane instead.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the first New Directions performance that does not include Mercedes Jones. So this is the only episode in the entirety of Glee, all what, like 120 episodes, something like that has a Mike A plot. Only time.
Only one.
Poor Mike. Also, this episode is the last we see of the Skanks. You might be thinking, wait, the Skanks were in this episode? Apparently they are. Oh. I think they're in Who Run the World, I think.
Oh, okay.
Glee Wiki did not specify, but I believe that's what they're in. Lauren Zices is also apparently in this episode somewhere in the background.
Oh.
So I assume it's probably that same number.
Probably.
This is the last we see of Lauren Zices for the rest of the season. Because remember, she was supposed to become Kurt's campaign manager, and then they said, don't think so, and they completely screwed over Ashley Fink. Sorry, Ashley. And everyone get your tissues ready. This is the swan song of one Azemio Adams.
No! Are you kidding me?
He never comes back.
Never?
His last appearance in the whole show.
He's not even in West Side Story?
No, which is weird. He auditioned.
Are you kidding?
Azemio, bye.
Azemio.
Sad.
Dude.
That's it. Not many glacks for this show. Kind of a boring behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's how your glacks made me feel. Just kidding. Just kidding. You want a recap?
No.
Tight. I didn't want to give it.
You have to. You're legally obligated to.
Yeah, we signed contracts, you guys.
We did. With Satan when we started this podcast.
Dude, don't make jokes about that. Sometimes people really don't like that.
We signed contracts with Ryan Murphy.
Which is worse than Satan. I'll tell you what.
When we started this podcast.
Could you imagine?
All right, let's recoup.
My biggest fear is Ryan Murphy finding out about our podcast.
No, I think about that all the time. And we got, like, Kevin McHale is doing a show with Ryan Murphy right now.
Yeah.
He's doing, like, an anthology of American Horror Story.
Yeah.
And people have been messaging us about it. And they're like, can you believe that Kevin McHale went back to work with Ryan Murphy? And
I'm like,
yes,
I
can. Because I would with Ryan Murphy.
Oh, my God. Hear me out. I also think Ryan Murphy does great work.
Yes.
I will say it to anyone. Glee is amazing. Even when it's shitty, it's incredible. Like, Pose is one of the most amazing things that's ever happened to TV. American Horror Story, like, changed the fucking game. I am obsessed with The Politician.
Scream Queens is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
You've never even seen season two, you hooker. What did she say in the video?
Oh, gosh. I think she calls us stupid hookers.
Yeah, there's a video that Emma Roberts did for, like, you know, see you in season two. Idiot hookers. I think that's what it is.
It's idiot hookers.
Hey, idiot hookers.
But I love even that still, show.
Scream Queens is awesome. So, of course, I fucking would go work for Ryan Murphy. Are you kidding me?
Ryan, if you listen to his podcast, we're available.
I'm sorry.
Put us on your show. Our apologies for everything we've said. Know that it all comes from a place of love. We are big fans of Glee.
And also, hire us. I was born a sellout, you guys.
I have no artistic integrity, not an ounce of it.
Are you ready for this recap?
Heck yes.
Here's what you missed on Glee. It's week two of West Side Story auditions. When Mike receives an A-, his father tries to make him quit Glee Club and make him break up with Tina. He, against his parents' wishes, auditions for Riff. Mercedes realizes that she has as much of a shot at Maria that Rachel has and decides, with the help of Shane, to go for it. The directors hold a callback diva off and offer the part to both of them. Mercedes, feeling overlooked by the New Directions, declines the part and leaves the New Directions to join Shelby's new club. Rachel decides to run for class president. Will, against Emma's wishes, invites her parents over for dinner, giving Will a new insight to Emma's OCD origins. And that's what you missed on Glee!
Brava! Brava!
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Okay, what did you think of Agent F?
I loved it. What?
You did?
I was watching it and I was like, since when is this episode very good?
Okay.
I mean, of course, we all know they shouldn't be doing West Side Story. It's a known fact. They're all white or at least not Latinx, except for Santana. That's a known fact. Also, the fact that they keep making the Asian F jokes and like a million Asian jokes.
Yeah.
Two big like sore spot problems of this episode. But, like, plot-wise and, like, focus on characters,
yeah,
I was in it. I loved it. I had a great time.
Yeah,
I think it's the strongest episode so far of season 3.
Whoa!
Not
for real?
So far. There are literally only two other contenders.
All right.
What about you? What do you like, I Am Unicorn or Purple Piano Project more?
I Am Unicorn.
Okay. That's a good episode.
It is a good episode. We've had some good episodes so far. Hear me out. This is my review of this episode. This episode is wild. Mm-hmm. It is so, like, in my notes, I have the words oof and geez written a million times. I'm like, oof, oof, woof, geez, woof, woof.
Dang, did a dog write these notes?
Drama. Did who?
A dog?
No, me, which is the next closest thing. I am as golden retrievery as you get. Have you met me?
No.
I didn't think so.
We actually record these podcast episodes alone in a room and each send them to Tiffany we've never met and she edits our conversations together. Yeah. They're all scripted.
Yeah.
They're written by Ryan Murphy.
Wait. Did you ever were you like into YouTube back in the day, like early YouTube days?
Not God. As much as I think you're going to hope I was.
There was this YouTube channel and it was this girl who... It was, like, framed as a vlog.
Is this the Pride and Prejudice one? Okay.
No, I do love that, though. The Lizzie Bennet Diaries? Is that what you're talking about? No, it was way earlier than that. So, it was, like, the first, like, year of... She was, like, the first vlogger ever. And it was framed... Like, she had this, like... These, like, really, like, rude parents who, like, were really strict about, like, strict. And then she had this boyfriend who was, like, you know, kind of a jerk. And, like, it was, like, she met him, and, like, blah, 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 blah. Turns out she's, like, in a cult. and she had to like run away from home. Everyone thought it was real for so long. And then it turned out it wasn't true. And it wasn't real. And it was like this girl had been scamming everyone, and that like everything she was doing was really scripted. Do you ever hear that?
No, but God. Respect.
I respect madness. That. I wonder if I could look it up. I don't even know what to Google. You know what I mean? I'm sure other people know what I'm talking about. But I remember watching it and being like, what is going on with what's her face? I hope she's okay.
Lonely girl 15.
Lonely girl.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Am I a detective? That took me 8 seconds.
What did you Google?
I just Googled YouTube cult vlog.
Lonely girl, straight up.
Lonely girl 15.
Lonely girl 15.
Ran from June 16th, 2006 to August 1st, 2008.
Holy crap. Okay, sorry. I just had to. Totally. Oof. Anyway.
Good for her.
This episode is more wild than Lonely Girl 15.
Great.
Are you ready to talk about Agent F, though?
Yes.
How do you want to break down this episode?
I forgot to organize my notes.
Ugh.
So
I never do that.
I don't know. We have the Mike storyline. Mm-hmm. We have the Mercedes storyline. And we have the Will I Am storyline, like the Will I Am and MMA storyline.
Uh-huh. Like Will I Am?
What?
Will I Am?
Will I Am, yes. Mm-hmm. And MMA. I think that's it, question mark? Because the Rachel and Kurt stuff kind of falls under Mercedes.
Yeah.
So those three.
Okay, what do you want to talk about first?
Oh gosh, I don't know. Do you want to talk about Mike?
I would love to talk about Mike.
Great!
I love Mike Chang. How'd you feel about the Mike Chang plot?
I love Mike Chang. Okay.
I love Mike Chang.
So, they make a lot of jokes about Asian stereotypes. Didn't love that.
No.
The storyline of like Mike having overbearing parents and him. Because, like, we have seen that Mike is, like, a very multi-talented dude, mm-hmm. in the fact that, like, he is a football player.
Yeah.
And then he's in the Glee Club and all that stuff. So the storyline of, like, him having very overbearing parents who, like, don't take his passion for the arts seriously, I think is a good one. I think there is a lot of potential there. This storyline I like overall, but whoa, it's got some weird moments.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Like, to point out the obvious, I only feel alive when I'm
does a tour
this when I'm doing this. That oh, is
that
like God. Mike Chang is so dramatic, and I love that. I identify with that. Like him, like rage dancing in the dance studio, and then seeing like you know like an apparition of his father and his girlfriend. Like brother, I have been there. Like it is the drama
and the way that he. It's not that he, like, goes to the dance studio because he's like, I gotta work this out.
He happens upon it.
He is walking down the hall and he's like, I cannot resist the siren call.
Absolutely.
Of this empty ballet studio in the middle of a high school. And just, like, goes in and dances out his feelings. It is dramatic.
Awesome.
It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Also, seriously, the only time I feel special is when I do that. I love the headcanon that he specifically is only talking about a tour.
Yes.
He's like, any other dance move, but when I spin, special.
Yeah.
Special.
I mean, I get that.
Also, can we talk about the fact, this is like the most like theater kiddie, like theater will save the world bullcrap I've ever heard in my life. When he's talking to his mom and he's like, I don't want to be a surgeon or a lawyer, mom. I want to be an artist. Special. I wrote my notes. All you lawyers and surgeons are basic pieces of shit.
Yeah, literally.
That Mike Chang is like, being a doctor and literally saving people's lives.
I know.
They're not special.
No.
I want to dance that saves lives.
Special.
Which, hear me out.
I feel that. Yeah.
Like, we are people who, you know, made the arts our career. I'm on board with, like, this is what I'm passionate about. I want to do this with my life. But, like, Mike, surgeons are, like, some of the most important people on earth. You don't have to crap on them to, like, make your dream of dancing seem more impressive.
Well, I feel like that is totally, like, an arts kid teenager thing to do, mm-hmm. where it's like, well, I'm just not like other girls. I don't want to be a lawyer. You know what I mean? Where it's like, dude, We need lawyers. Don't be mean to the kids who want to be lawyers.
Seriously,
you know?
Like, we need them to keep society running.
Literally.
And just the way, like, you know, we love to say that art saves lives. Surgeons literally save
they
lives.
Absolutely. And, like, I think art has saved my life on multiple occasions, I would say. But, like, metaphorically. It is never like... Yeah,
more like your life in the abstract.
Yes.
Not like they, like, kept your heart beating.
No. It is never like, you know... I was going to say a medical term. I don't know about that. I haven't watched Grey's in a couple of months. But, you know, but I get that. It's so funny.
It's big time end of Rent energy.
Totally.
Where Mimi dies, and then Roger's like, but what if I sing you a song? And God himself was like, put her soul back in her body. This man is singing.
Right? Like, she needs to hear his song. He finally finished the song. God, oh Rent gosh. Is crazy.
I listened to, not to make this a podcast where we talk about other podcasts, but I listened to a podcast called Musical Splaining, which is Lindsay Ellis, whom I love. She like really loves theater, has like been a theater kid her whole life. She's a YouTuber. And then her friend Kava Taharian has like only ever seen one musical in his life, knows nothing about
it.
Oh,
cool.
And so they go and see musicals about it and like talk about their thoughts. And it wasn't until I listened to the podcast, because Kava points it out, that I noticed how many musicals are about like people saving other people's lives just by singing a song. That it's like so self-congratulatory.
Totally.
That it's like, what we're doing here on stage brought this person back from the dead. And it's like, no, it did not.
Yeah, literally.
Maybe it like helped them get through a tough time. It did not put life back into their body.
Shit, man. I don't even know.
But I do love the arts, everyone.
Me too.
Arts are very important. Arts
yeah,
education.
You're talking to
hear
two a-holes who are professional artists. Like, we know.
You're talking to two a-holes who are special. I'm like all you lawyers and yeah. surgeons out there listening to this podcast.
And two a-holes who know how to do a tour. I don't.
I was going to say, don't say that about me. I don't know if I can back it up. I'm a dancer third.
Oh my God. I'm a model first.
Anyways. This whole Mike plotline is very DCOM. It's very Disney Channel original movie.
Absolutely.
It's very much, but Mike, you're giving up your dream. No, Dad, I'm giving up yours. But I can't deny that I do like it.
Oh, no, I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And like, I think it is no secret that I think Mike Chang is one of the most special characters on this television show. And one of the most underutilized as well.
Yes.
And it sucks that his main like story is... an Asian stereotype in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it is one that, you know, I think a lot of kids in the arts relate to. And so I appreciated seeing it for sure. I'm glad it happened. Mm-hmm. But God, at what cost? Oh, my goodness.
At the cost of a tour, of saying that spinning makes him feel special.
I mean.
I also like seeing more of his relationship with Tina and just seeing like how much Tina believes in him.
Absolutely.
Truly. The most healthy couple in the Glee Club.
I think so.
And also the couple that we see nothing of, because the writers are like, oh, we only want to write about people whose lives are an absolute mess.
Yeah.
So these two healthy kids.
And you know
kids,
what? I get that. I truly love to watch couples that are a mess.
True, true.
Like, I love that moment where, like, Mike is imagining Tina and Tina's like, I see your heart when you dance. And, like, that is something
yes
like that made me fall in love with you. And I was like, that's so sweet. Oh. You know, like seeing someone like live their passion is total. I just love it. So cute.
Speaking of Tina and Mike though, you want to know what part made me laugh? When he's having when Mike's having his dream ballet where he's dancing out his feelings and his dad's there and his dad's like, you're never gonna amount to anything. And then Tina's there and Tina's like, Mike, this is you, like dancing is you. And then he hugs Tina and the camera shifts and he's hugging nothing.
It's so funny. It was so funny. I like couldn't there. I knew my brain knew that like both of those were like imagination things, like figments of his imagination, pardon me. But like, I was like, is Tina actually here? I can't really tell. And then he hugged the air.
Alfonso's got you. He's like,
he
some
does.
People, they need it clear. They need it spelt out that Tina is not in this room. He is hugging nothing, everybody.
you know what I did think was funny and then became not funny? I have a few notes like this, especially with like the Asian jokes in this episode.
I know exactly what you're going to talk about.
I have two.
Oh, well, so I know
which
one
am
of them.
Gonna talk about?
You're going to talk about the watch one.
The watch one.
Uh-huh.
Because Ian and I watched this episode together. We tried to remain silent, but there's this joke that Artie is like, where the heck is Mike? He runs like an expensive Swiss watch. And I immediately burst out laughing. I'm like, that's so freaking funny. And then they had to undercut it with saying, reproduced cheaply in China. Like,
you guys, I don't know if you knew this, but Harry Shum Jr. is Asian. I know,
like,
the show doesn't really ever point it out.
Yeah.
But he is Asian.
Yeah, it's not something that I think is a very apparent at all, yeah. Especially mm-hmm. in his character development.
But you know, I do have to respect that they do, however, do a very good job of like fleshing out his culture as an Asian person. They don't just make cheap jokes about it and then never actually like go into what his culture is.
Absolutely agree. Yeah. I hate the show. The other one that I have is, gosh, the idea that Principal Figgins like has mad beef with Tina and that like Tina keeps up this like vampire thing. That is the funniest fucking joke on the planet. Like that, like she like bullies him into like, you know, making her not have to take gym. That's fucking hilarious. And then Tina has to like make a joke about how he is Indian and like call his blood spicy curry. Like it, that like, these jokes are funny enough, you know, which that is the part that bothers me is like these fucking writers know how to write a joke. The Swiss watch, that's funny. The joke that like Principal Figgins is afraid of Tina, like that's funny. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be this. Oh my gosh, it's super infuriating.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Mike's audition?
Heck.
For Riff.
Yes, we should.
Because listen, I am like, I remember when Mike,
I do too.
Learning that Mike was going to audition for Riff. And I was like, this is everything. It's such a good idea. Like, who else would play Riff? Nobody. Freaking
not Puck. Did you see him enter and try to dance during this number? Dude, we both started laughing.
The funniest part of the whole episode is like this freaking Muppet coming onto stage after all these football players / professional dancers are like being beautiful, and Puck's like,
I'm here too.
Like, don't you forget me. I am also auditioning. Which, like, listen, that's how I dance too. I hear you. But it's so funny. But I remember I was like, what a beautiful idea. I'm obsessed with it. It's incredible. I'm so excited to see Mike as freaking Riff. He's going to freaking kill it. And he did. I really like that rendition of that song. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think the dance is beautiful. I love the football players.
Yeah. I was into Glee as a theater kid first. So, like, when they do pop songs, like, good for them.
Yes.
When they do theater songs, I was always like, yeah, 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 yeah. Just, like, really feeling it.
No, I feel you. So, listen, they made, like, they were making theater kid jokes at the fucking ass in this episode. They said something like Schubert Alley. What do they call them?
It was something about how Sondheim was going to send a plague of locusts from Schubert Alley.
Schubert Alley locusts. I was like, that is Ian and I.
But, like, this whole West Side Story plot is so up my alley.
Me
it's
too.
Frankly offensive.
I know.
I, like, am so into watching an audition process.
Me too.
And watching these kids duke it out for, like, specific roles in a musical. Instead of just, like, when it was Cabaret and they were like, Rachel is Sally and don't think about the rest of it.
Yeah.
And have it be like a full audition process, and it's like a multi-episode arc, and then like seeing them perform songs from the show in character. As we all know, they shouldn't be doing West Side Story.
Yeah.
But I am so here for this high school musical, as in like a musical in a high school storyline.
We know what you mean.
Incredible.
No, I completely agree. So fun, so exciting, so good.
Amazing.
Yeah. And isn't it so interesting? Now that auditions are over, it's not like common practice to sing a song from the show you're auditioning for. Sometimes mm-hmm. like directors will like ask you to put specific thing, like to like prepare specific things like from the show. That's not like unnormal, but it's not super normal, especially in an educational setting. But it is so funny to me, like watching the, especially the development of the auditions and seeing that, it's just the people who get the parts who sing the songs uh-huh. for the audition. And I'm like, if I was fucking Mercedes this week and I heard that Rachel sang Somewhere, I'd be pissed out of my mind. And then I'd go in with another West Side Song. Like, I'd be so pissed.
Well, hear me out.
Hearing you.
These kids also, the ones who didn't sing from the show, don't know how to pick a song that feels like the character. Because Mercedes killed Spotlight. But I was also like, does this sound like Maria?
No.
No. But to counterpoint what you said, at my high school, when you auditioned for the musicals, you were required to sing from the show.
Really? Ooh.
You would go in and they would have...
I've never heard of that in my life for a high school.
They would have the songs. I think the only time I didn't do it was my senior year. Mm. But before, up until... Because we got a new drama teacher that year. But up until that point, our old drama teacher, she would have the song for the part.
Did you ever have... in school, did you ever...
like high school.
High school. Did you ever sing a song from the show you were auditioning for?
Can I tell a story?
Yes.
Yes, okay. My roommate Trey just walked in. He's getting on the mic to share his high school theater audition experience.
The first time... Sorry to be up in your mic space. The first time I auditioned for a play, it was Willy Wonka. And I sang my rendition of... What's that one song that the Candyman sings?
The Candyman.
The Candyman. Yeah, I sang that. Yeah, I sang the Candyman. And when I say it was like a cover version because I had no vocal training, so it was in my own key, which was atonal. In high school, that was the only time and I sang Hey There from Pajama Game when I did Pajama Game. No, I didn't get the part. Are you kidding me?
You're very talented. You could have.
I was 14. A lot has changed since then. That was 10 years ago. All right. Bye, everybody.
Go check out Trey's podcast, Miss Latoe's Secret, everyone.
Bye.
Anyways, my drama teacher would have, like, if you were auditioning for The Beast, I always talk about Beauty and the Beast. It's the show I remember the most. You sang If I Can't Love Her. If you were auditioning for Belle, you sang Home. If you didn't really care, you sang like Be Our Guest. Like yeah. She had like, if you want this character, you sang this specific song. Mm. Yeah.
I never did that.
I mean, your teacher was more like how the real world works.
Yeah.
I think my teacher just had the foresight to be like, if I let these kids pick their own songs, they're going to do exactly what the McKinley students did and pick songs they like that have no bearing in how this character is. And so then...
That makes sense.
It's going to be hard for me to picture them as the character because the song they sang...
It is definitely a hard learning curve to like learn what's a good audition song for a show.
Yeah.
I still don't even think I like have my me bearings neither. On that. Sometimes, especially when I'm auditioning for like rep things, I'm like, I'm just going to sing a song I like to sing and then mm-hmm. hopefully they'll see something in me, which is maybe not. Which is exactly what the New Directions kids sing. Because like that's what Mercedes did. Mercedes was like, I'm going to sing something that is me. That is me being a leading lady. And not her being Maria. But, you know.
Speaking of this casting process, I don't know what is absolutely bonkers to me. At the end of this episode, Artie puts up this cast list.
Yeah.
As you mentioned... Only the people who sang from the show got cast.
Yes.
Except for, like, who knows what Santana sang we didn't see.
Santana probably was like, give me that part.
And yeah, they were like, you can have whatever you want. She was like, I'm literally the only person who should be cast as a Puerto Rican in this show.
Yeah, literally.
They were like, you're correct.
Like, where is the lie here?
But he puts up this cast list. There are only 5 names on it.
Yeah. What about all the football players?
Like, beyond the fact... that there is no ensemble.
Yeah.
Which, like, how does the ensemble know that they're in the show? Also, like, Bernardo's not on there. Bernardo's, like, a significant character.
A huge part, yeah.
But you know who is on there?
Who?
Officer Krupke. You gotta put him up there. He's what the whole show is built on. But, like, a 5-person cast of West Side Story is all that's up there. Absolutely, wow. No one else is on that list.
That is bonkers. They couldn't even like. Insanity. I don't understand that either. It is raining and it is fully sunny. That what? Is. I was just thinking it smelled like rain. Ian, fun fact, hates the rain. Lena, fun fact, loves the rain. Last night we were walking home, we got caught in a rainstorm, and I was like, this is amazing. And Ian was like, get me out of this rain right now.
I loved the rain.
I know.
Until I lived in Argentina in a town that only had dirt streets, and every time it rained, everything turned into mud, and I would slip and fall all the time.
Now I hear you.
And I have never liked rain since then. Because every time it rained, I would be like, I'm going to get covered in mud today.
Yeah.
Hey.
Boy. Does it rain a lot in Argentina?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And yeah, they have like a when it gets to the raining season, and it's the worst because it will get so humid, like unbearable.
Yeah.
And so then you're like, I just want it to rain so the humidity lessens. But then also once it rains, it's going to be so muddy. And the mud was like slick and slippery too.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Did you fell in it a lot?
All the time. I had to deal with myself where every time I fell in mud, I'd buy myself a pizza.
Aww.
Just to be like, here's something good out of this experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, do you have more Mike thoughts?
I just love that Mike is a drama king. I just think that's the best. I mm-hmm. love him. But no, I don't think so.
Great. Drop the mic. But what do you want to talk about next?
Should we talk about... Let's talk about
Do you want to get Will out of the way? Yeah.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Will.i.am and MMA?
This is a classic Will plot.
Mm-hmm.
It is classic. Like, this is like if you... when you like put in a bunch of scripts to like a bot and then it writes you a new script, that's this Will plot. It is like textbook. It is Will seeing his partner like, you know, not doing well, doing something against her will, and then making it his problem and being like, it is my job to fix you. And then he sings Fix You by Coldplay. Like, it is textbook Will in his savior complex. Mm-hmm. He bothers the hell out of me. It really bothers me that, like, you know, Emma sets... I mean, it's not a very clear boundary, obviously, but obviously it's not a yes either. It's not like, you know... Does that make sense? Where she's not saying like
about her parents?
Yeah, it's her parents stuff.
I mean, like she's obviously
like avoiding it.
She said that they're dead.
I know, but she just doesn't want to. She doesn't want it. Like, yeah. like take a hint, Will, mm-hmm. and then Will against her like wishes.
Will against her will.
I know. I wasn't gonna say it, but I'm glad you did. Invites them over, and like she's very uncomfortable, and then her OCD gets really bad. Like, come on, bad partnership. If my partner did that, I'd be like, cool. You hate my guts. Let's never speak again, you know?
Mm-hmm. So. Brave, controversial opinion about this Will plot. One, of course I didn't like it. It was my least favorite plot of the episode. It's Will. But brave, controversial, this is one of the better Will plots for me.
Mm.
Because could this possibly be the only time in the entirety of Glee where Will's savior complex is viewed as a negative thing?
Oh,
where
sure.
Where he tries to fix someone else and it blows up in his face and he has a moment
of
like...
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
I should have listened to you and I shouldn't have meddled and I shouldn't have tried to fix everything. But then they completely go back on it because they have this scene in the bedroom, which is like a kind of a lovely scene where Emma's praying and she's like... She's just like, her OCD is so bad. And Will kind of fesses up and he's like, hey, like, I really messed up. Like, mm-hmm. I should have listened when you made it clear that you didn't want me to meet your parents. Like, I overstepped. I just wanted things to be a certain way. And I'm sorry I pushed you. And he even has, like, he says some sort of line to her where he says, like, what I'm going to do now is, like, listen. Or, like, it's not that exactly, mm-hmm. but it's something of that nature of, like, what I'm going to do now is, like, pay attention to like what you tell me you need instead of like assuming I know. And yeah. I was like, wow, great learning moment for Will. And then they immediately undercut it by having him sing Fix You,
yeah.
which is literally like, I am going to solve all of your problems myself. Which
no,
hear me
I
out.
Totally get that.
I do love this song. But
love this song.
In this context with Will singing it, I was like two on the nose in a bad way and that they think this is a good lesson for mm-hmm. him and he should not be doing this anymore.
Yeah.
So up until him singing Fix You, I actually think this is one of the, I think this is maybe the only good Will Savior Complex plot.
I see where you're coming from with that. It definitely like blows up in his face in no way that like it ever has before, which mm-hmm. I appreciate. Just because like that's what happens when you like meddle, especially with people's boundaries, you know? Mm-hmm. It blows up in your fucking face.
Yeah. Also. We both had a reaction to this, so I think we both thought the same thing. They keep like just hinting at like Will and Emma's sex life. And I'm like, I don't need this. They're living together. I assume that like I know that Emma has all these issues, so they're not having sex, but I assume that like they have moments of intimacy. I don't need them to be communicated to me. Will finds Emma's wedding collection and he's like, well, in the spirit of honesty, here's my collection. That's his porn stash,
yes,
right?
Yes. Which like I have.
Why?
Why on earth? Also, Will, that is your partner.
Who is that for?
And also, you would know that she wouldn't be comfortable with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Emma's like, cool. Well, I'm going to go freaking scrub my eyes with soap now.
Yeah, literally. It's so frustrating.
Who is that for? Who did Ian Brennan? He was like, the audience has got to know that Will has a porn stash.
Like, I don't think I ever got that until today. And we both were like,
like, enough's enough with this.
I know. I'm over it. It's just like, oh, Emma's not having sex with me. I'm just going to remind her that I'd like to have sex just all day long.
It's so awful.
And he even says something to her, like, in the episode, he's like, there are so many milestones I want to, you know, get mm-hmm. to with you. And I was like, Will.
Seriously.
She fucking knows. Leave her alone.
Seriously. He's like, I see that you've been thinking about getting married for a long time. I think we probably will get married too. Also, there's some other stuff that I think
like probably consummate the marriage. I don't know.
Doing. He's like, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes a baby in a baby carriage. How do babies come about? Do you know? I could show you.
In my porn collection.
I've been told I'm a very good teacher.
Oh my God.
To quote his conversation with Holly Holiday. Other Will thoughts. I cannot stand the way that this show earnestly believes that Will is like the king of men. That he is like a shining example like what all men should be. Mm-hmm. Beast has a line to Will where they're like, oh, what are you worried about? You're every in-law's dream. In what universe?
Yeah, literally. He'd be my nightmare.
If I brought home Will Schuster, my parents would be like, we will disown you.
Yeah.
You're not marrying this man.
Literally.
And that isn't me making a joke, because when I was living with my parents over the pandemic, I would make them watch a lot of Glee, and my mom was very vocal about how much she could not stand Will Schuster.
Go, Eileen, seriously. Oh, I don't even think my mom would get it. Honestly, yeah. The show just doesn't know who this man is. I don't know who this man is.
I'm sorry to this man. He's not who the show thinks he is. Terrible. Do you want to talk about dinner with her parents? Her actual parents?
Sure, yeah.
What'd you think?
The ginger supremacists of it all. I like this scene.
I love this scene.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible. And I think it is a very smart thing for Glee to do mm-hmm. where if they were like literal white supremacists, it would be too heavy.
And they are.
I mean, they are. They are. They are. That's me quoting something that no one knows. I'm going to stop that inside joke with myself. But yes, they are white supremacists. But yeah. If it was like very on the nose white supremacist, it would feel, the vibe would be so off for Glee that it would be very jarring. Yeah. And so to make them specifically ginger supremacists mm-hmm. is ridiculous enough that like it still fits Glee and is like tongue in cheek, but then also still has, you know, the racism underneath and like these are bad people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I really like this scene a lot. I have like heard people say words just like this before mm-hmm. where it's like, it's not racist to like want to preserve your shines. Like, yeah. Okay, cool. Like this is you don't even hear yourself. Mm-hmm. And to like put it in this context of like red hair.
Yes.
I think is tongue in cheek enough. Mm-hmm. But also then we have that flashback scene of them being like absolutely racist to their waitress, mm-hmm. to like their server, and then like showing an origin of Emma's, you know, of Emma's OCD truly. And I really like the scene, and I appreciate Will calling them out and standing up for Emma as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the better moments I've seen him as a partner. I swear, like, if I, like, you know, that's how I would want like my partner to like stand up to, you know, my parents being rude to me, if they were ever rude to me in front of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. I think it was one of my favorite Will moments. Like, you guys are supes racist, and mm-hmm. also like have some fucking compassion for your kid. Yeah. You know, so I appreciated that moment.
Yeah. I also, like you were saying, it is perfect because like it's perfect satire, and that it is this ridiculous thing, but then the stuff they say, you're like, oh, that's like real stuff I hear like real racists say.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's also that line after Will gets all mad at them and like storms out or whatever the heck happens. I don't remember what happens. And Emma's mom is just kind of sitting there quietly, and then she just goes, these beans are a disaster. And then her husband goes, these beans are what happens when you sit out an election, Rose. Goes, well, there wasn't a ginger candidate.
Yeah, so I really like that scene. I think thought it was good.
Yeah. However, on a consistency level, Emma canonically had a brother. Where is he?
Yeah.
He is in none of these flashbacks.
Maybe he's like much younger.
But then also,
like 8 years younger.
The reason we know she has a brother is because canonically her OCD started because she went to a dairy farm and her brother pushed her into a pile of manure.
I didn't remember that at all.
And then this, so like if her brother is that much younger.
Maybe he's like 19.
Yeah, maybe he's way older. Yeah. And so he'd already left.
Yeah.
Or maybe, hear me out.
Hear you.
These writers forgot that she had a brother and that they had already given an explanation for why she has OCD.
Right. Seriously, I think you're right. Because I didn't remember that either. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think it's the more compelling story to tell that it's like her parents being absolutely racist towards other people that's like, you know, spurring her, mm-hmm. especially her like her compulsion to clean. Yeah.
I mostly am like, couldn't we have a little redheaded boy in those scenes?
Just
like sitting next to her.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Maybe he was there, but you know, like when you like picture, when you like have a flashback in your own head and your siblings aren't there.
Yes.
Maybe it's that where it's like, you're not a reliable narrator.
Yeah. And she's like, he wasn't really a part of this trauma. It was mostly my parents. So and it was I'll like,
no, he was definitely there, you know, or like, I'll tell a story and my sister will be like, oh yeah, I remember that. And I'll be like, you were not there. And she's like, I super was. And I'll be like, like that.
Do you want to talk about Fix You?
Yeah, I do. Okay. First of all, big Coldplay fan over here. Mm-hmm. Seriously, love Coldplay. This song, I really like this song, but like it is so Will having a savior complex that I'm like, why hasn't he sung this before?
Juicy, why isn't this the only song he ever sings to every woman he's ever met?
I know. He's like, I'll fix you. I'll take care of you. Your problems are my problems. But it's a sweet number. I mean, it's very like, keep holding on to me, or what's mm-hmm. And what if God was one of us? Or it's like,
it's the white shirts and
it's
like,
the white shirts and jeans and uh-huh. trucks and just like standing with your hands mm-hmm. in your pocket. Also, was Emma there?
No, that's my thing.
Who was this for?
Who is he performing for?
But frankly, if I was Emma and then I got invited to this, I would be embarrassed. I'd be like, I'd be so pissed. Like,
I think we need to break up after
like,
that.
Like, are you kidding? Did you freaking tell your whole Glee Club about this?
Uh-huh. The way that, like, he's singing lead.
Shouldn't you be prepping
lead,
for sectionals? Come on.
He's singing lead and making the students sing backup for him is weird. Why could it not have been that, like, Will starts the song, you know, and it's just, like, in his head he's singing it. And then it shifts to the cast that's going up. And then it changes to just, like, the Glee Club is singing it. because like it's whatever their assignment.
And he's like walking in the hallway dramatically.
Yeah, we just get like some knowing looks from Will of just like, ooh, but this song is exactly what I'm going through.
Totally, absolutely.
Like, why did he have to be on stage with them? It was weird.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, shout out to the Fonz. That scene of Emma praying, and then you look in the mirror, and it's little Emma praying.
Super sweet.
That's straight up Alfonso.
Literally.
There he is. That's his calling card.
Seriously, he is incredible. I think he's... I've said this before. I really think he's a great...
No, he... Especially like his cinematography on this show.
Yeah.
He does a great job.
Every time, it's incredible.
Oh, also with this song... Remember how Emma started going to therapy?
Yeah.
Whatever happened with that?
Well, and she's actively in therapy. It takes a minute.
No, I know. And I just feel like the writers forgot that it was happening.
Yeah.
Because it's absolutely never been addressed since. And to my knowledge, never really ever gets addressed again. Like, come on. And you'd think, Will, you'd think that when Emma was having an absolute meltdown in the bedroom,
yeah,
Will would
they were
be like,
let's get a therapist on the phone.
He'd be like, what are some tools that like you and your therapist have discussed?
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead of being like, I'm going to sing a song about how I have a savior complex to you right now. It'll fix everything.
Absolutely. You know, having a partner with like mental health issues is like, you know, a thing that how do I even say this? A doable thing. You know what I mean? Where it's so frustrating, this show, how like they make Emma look like such a burden to Will, you know? And like, I don't know. It's frustrating, you know?
Yeah.
I don't even have the words for it. Who put me in a Glee podcast? I don't have the words. You know what I mean?
And they do, they always paint Will as like such a hero that it's like, he is willing to put up with it.
He's willing to put up with
it when
it's
incredible.
Like, Emma's the one who's probably living with it.
One thing I love in this plot line is when Will asks to meet her parents and she says that they're dead. And he says, you two were talking to them on the phone the other day. And she goes,
yes.
I was talking to their ghosts. I have ghost parents.
That was fucking hilarious.
Great.
Ian Brennan, you got some jokes on ya. Why you gotta make him racist?
Amen to that. Do you have any more Will I Am thoughts?
Let me look at my notes.
Specifically this plot line.
Nope.
All right. Bye, Will.
See you later.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.
On to Mersachel.
Mersachel, I like it. Off the bat, a callback, you know, that they turn into a diva off. I love this show.
Mm-hmm.
I love this show. Are you kidding me? Random song for them to choose.
Right?
To me, Maria is a much more, like, just like textbook, she's a more legit character. Like, she sings in a more legit tone. And both of these women know how to sing this way.
Amber Riley was an opera major.
So, like, why wouldn't they pick something even, like, more musical theater-y in
like
that
more
vein?
Lyrical.
Yeah. They both can do it, but you know what it is? I think they're trying to sell tunes.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's 100% it.
And that's why they don't do as many musical theater things anymore. But then they do the Dream Girls number. Tell me your thoughts about the Dream Girls number. I would love to hear them.
We're really jumping the gun on this one. I have to tell you, this is maybe my favorite part of the episode. I am so here for it. I love it so much.
I totally thought you would hate it.
Oh my gosh. I'm so down for it. I also think it's hilarious how shoehorned it is.
Totally. Like,
the general idea of the number works, which is that Mercedes feels underappreciated. Mm-hmm. And Will is like being so hard on her and he's trying to kick her out. And she's like, why is everyone turning their backs on me? Very similar to how Effie White feels in that number.
Yes.
I love that in order to justify some of these lyrics, they had to randomly have Mercedes have a stomach bug. Because they have all those things about like, you're so sick lately, Effie, which fun fact, then because the reason that Effie is sick in the musical is because she's pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so then a bunch of fans were like, is Mercedes pregnant?
Yeah.
And Amber Riley had to go on Twitter and be like, no. Literally, they just wanted to justify that lyric, so they had me throw up a bunch.
And then, honestly, like, I love that, especially in the early moments of this episode, like them planting the seed of the Dreamgirls number is hilarious to me.
Seriously, they make it a point to be like, she's running late, she slept in, it's 4:30 in the afternoon. One of the most lasting lines to come out of Glee.
One of my favorite moments ever. I just think that's an Alfonso moment where it's like a swing from Will to the kids, and then Mercedes walking forward, and then Queen being like, it's 4:30 in the afternoon.
So honestly,
it's hilarious.
I've been there. I woke up at 3 p.m.
If I could have today, I would have today. Yes.
And then having her throw up in the trash can and be like, I'm sorry, I've just been sick lately. And it's all Ian Brennan being like, because we're going to sing It's All Over later. And then also, like, some of the songs, like some of the lines they give to people make no sense. Like Mike being like, I'm not a part of this, I'm just breaking into this business.
That makes the most sense. He's breaking into this biz. He's new to this singing game. One of the most lasting moments in when I think about this number, I think of Mike being like, I just auditioned for this musical. You're bringing me into something I don't want to be in. I think that makes more sense than a lot of them.
And then they have Tina and Quinn sit next to her so that Mercedes can be like, I was your sister. And it's like, wow, two relationships that the writers truly have forgotten about until this moment.
Yeah.
I love it.
Effie, we all have pain. This number. Which is so interesting because I think it's so many things that you hate.
I think the deal is that it's musical theater, and so then I just love all of them.
Sure. But it's like, you know, Mercedes, like, dialogue that is pre-recorded, you know, and it's like, it's lyrics, and it's like, oh, you're in this too, Puck? Like,
that's so stupid. Like, you're in this with him too?
It's so, I totally thought you would hate it. That's so funny.
No, I'm so on board with it.
That is so funny.
So on board.
Mm.
And then they set it up really well with Shane being like, you always say you're Beyonce, but on the inside you feel like Effie. Mm-hmm. Wink at the camera. We're singing It's All Over. Did you hear?
Did you hear?
We're singing It's All Over later. Get ready.
Did you hear?
All through the jungle, the news of it flew.
Seriously.
That's all I have to say.
I love that.
Oh, also, so this number starts, everyone, in case you haven't seen this episode in a while. Mercedes has been a pill about booty camp. They've put up with her bitching. They've put up with her nagging. Is that the line, nagging?
I think so.
She's been late. She's been mean. Getting fatter all the time. I don't love that last line, but it
take it up with Dreamgirls.
Take it up with Dreamgirls. She is getting pregnant, so she is legitimately getting fatter all the time. And so she's been like a pill at booty camp, and then she refuses to do the dance, and Will, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. All this to say, Will kicks her out of the Glee Club.
Yes.
She sings this whole song, and then it ends, like, It's All Over ends, and it's all very clearly a fantasy sequence with all of them leaving, because that's how it ends in Dreamgirls, but then we fade back into reality. And she's Mercedes the one is left. Alone in the auditorium.
I wonder if she came back to, like, say the line.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I like it more that Will was like, Mercedes, if you walk out the door, you're kicked out of Glee Club. And then he was like, anyways, everyone, let's go. And then, like, literally canceled booty camp and everyone left.
Yeah.
And maybe. Mercedes just stood there by herself.
Maybe.
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 Can we talk about booty camp for a minute?
Booty camp.
This is some fucked up shit to me. First of all, this whole booty camp plot bothers me to no end. I think it's like, and Mercedes brings up some real fucking points.
Uh-huh.
Where the hell is Rachel?
That's one of the reasons I love this episode so much.
Yeah.
Is because it's finally Will and the writers are being called out on the fact that, like, why is Rachel the golden goose? Like, why can she do nothing wrong when she sent someone to a crack house and I show up late for booty camp and it's like, you are not a team player.
Exactly. And like, this booty camp specifically is really frustrating and reminds me of so many terrible rehearsals and classes I've been in where it's like, do this incredibly hard move that you will never have to do ever. And we're going to make fun of you until you do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, so like you getting up in her face is not going to make her like do it better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Will, you have never made these kids dance like that before, and you're not going to. It's show choir. Like, come on. And it's just so frustrating, and I hate the way everyone speaks to Mercedes. It really bothers me. But I think I totally agree. Like, one of my favorite moments of this entire episode is, like, Rachel, like, screaming at Will, and then Rachel, like, getting up. Mercedes screaming at Will, and then Mercedes, like, getting up in Rachel's face.
Mm-hmm.
And being like, no, for real, let's talk about this, you know?
Yeah.
So that booty camp scene really pissed me the fuck off. But then we got the Dreamgirls numbers. That was pretty fun.
Yeah. I have some complaints with this plot line.
Tell me.
One is that we've talked about this before in Night of Neglect. Not Night of Neglect. Something after that. Whenever they were all auditioning. Funeral. We talked about it in Funeral. That these writers do not give Amber Riley the screen time she deserves.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to make Mercedes' character worse to justify it.
Yeah.
They have to be like, oh my gosh, she's not a team player.
Lazy.
Even though like we've made it a point to show that she's so giving that she like let Quinn live at her house. But it's like, she's not a team player now for some reason. Also, she's lazy now for some reason because we need to justify why she doesn't get all the attention she needs. That's annoying. Also, we've talked about it the last two episodes. I have to reiterate.
Mm.
Does Will have a chip implanted in his brain that will blow up and kill him if they lose nationals? Why?
I hope so.
Honestly. It
bothers me.
He is like abusive to these kids.
Yeah.
Mercedes even says to him, she is like, I have no time. I have all of my schoolwork, senior year of high school is easier than junior year, but like high school sucks.
Yeah.
She's like, I have all my school stuff, and then I have Glee every day, and now I also have this booty camp thing. Why are you
pushing
us? And
she's auditioning for the musical. Like, it's so much.
She straight up asks Will, like, why are you pushing us so hard? I'm doing my best. And his response is, it's not about doing your best anymore. It's about doing better. Will, you better die if you lose nationals. That is like the only justification for how awful you're being to these children who are doing an extracurricular activity for fun.
For fun.
Oh my gosh. And then just some other Will stuff that pissed me off in this episode. He does this activity at booty camp where he's like, everyone is going to do a dance combo,
mm-hmm.
and everyone who's doing it right, we're going to tap on the shoulder so they leave. So only the people who suck at it are left dancing like idiots by themselves.
Yeah.
Like, that is so embarrassing.
Yeah.
I would be absolutely mortified to be the only one left dancing.
And it's when you have the fucking unholy trinity who are all like dancers,
mm-hmm.
and like, you know, like people do like, and then you have Puck making fun of Finn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on, Will. This is like the environment you're fucking fostering in here. Are you kidding me?
And then, because we talked about last week how like booty camp isn't a terrible idea if he just was like, oh, this is a if you want to come deal. But this episode, he like really doubles down on the fact that it's only for people he thinks are bad at dancing.
Yeah.
Because Brittany comes, and instead of being like, oh, Brittany, great to have you here, he's like, why are you here?
Yeah.
Like, you're good at dancing. This is for people that suck. Why are you here?
Yeah.
Come on, Will.
Really pisses me off.
Ugh.
And, we didn't even mention this. Santana's back in Glee Club, I guess.
That crap is so stupid. Why did they have the plot line where she got kicked out?
I don't know.
Nothing came of it.
Nothing.
And it's straight up, the line is just like, Santana, why are you here? Oh, I re-swore my allegiance to the Glee Club. Okay, it would have been cool if we had a plot about that.
I know. It was also a big deal that you got kicked out.
Yeah.
It should be a big deal that you're back.
Come it was on. Like a very big character moment that like you sided with Sue and then Will kicked you out. Oh my gosh, these writers. Come on.
You know who I don't blame in any of this?
Who?
Alfonso.
Did you see that camera work? He did his best. He said, I'm going to try and wipe away these four problems.
It's not about doing my best, it's about doing better.
Hey. Anyways, Will's a menace. Booty camp is abusive.
Yeah.
On to West Side Story. What'd you think of Spotlight?
That's her audition song, right?
Yes.
Yes. Very good. Very, very good for Mercedes auditioning to be a leading lady. Bad audition song for Maria.
Agree.
But she sounds great.
Agree.
She looks beautiful.
Agree.
And I love, and I even love the conversation that Emma and Coach Beast are having about Mercedes, where they're all, where they're like, she's showing this like new confidence and new maturity that we've never seen in her before. Mm-hmm. And I totally saw that as well. And I was excited that they were having that conversation about her.
Yeah.
It was sweet. But bad audition song for Maria. I also think that Rachel's rendition of Somewhere was a bad audition song for Maria. So
they're
high schoolers.
What can you expect?
Yeah, truly.
I think this number's fabulous. I agree.
Oh, it's lovely.
Not Maria, but I think it's fabulous. I also like the beginning where she's like pointedly singing it at Rachel in the Glee Club.
Yeah. Oh, it's, oh my gosh, lovely. And then like, there's this moment where Brittany and Tina are talking to each other and then immediately drop into singing mm-hmm. backup. It's so cool.
My question is, was this Brittany and Tina's audition as well?
My answer is yeah.
Because they showed up and sang backup.
I think so.
Which also, I hate the fact that Tina is just...
Tina didn't even audition!
She's
Tina
always...
She should have gone to part at least.
Well, hear me out. If we are doing West Side Story and we don't care what anyone's race is because we're Glee, I think Tina's the best Marie in that club.
I... That agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Come on.
It upsets me that she's not even in talks. Mm-hmm. Which, like, I understand narratively them doing it with Rachel and Mercedes because mm-hmm. they've like done this before. They keep doing this dance. I understand it, but it's like, where's Tina? Tina would be an incredible Maria if we're doing the whole, you know, mm-hmm. race is out of the picture if we're doing West Side Story, which we shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Yeah. I just hate that she only ever is everyone's... Because, like, Brittany is a backup singer a lot of the time, too. But then Brittany will also get spotlight moments.
Yes.
Like, just in this episode, she gets her own song.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm always fine with having Brittany be backup singer. But every time it's Tina, I'm like, this is all they let you do, huh?
I know.
They let you out of your cage. They said, don't get too confident.
They said, do a step touch. Get back in.
You're just going to do a step touch. And then go back in there. We're locking you up again.
Literally.
Hey.
I know. Really pisses me off. But beautiful number.
Yes. Very weird that a callback is like out of the question, that it's like a special case scenario.
Yeah. Which, like, you should just do a callback with everyone.
Exactly.
But also this is a TV show and
yeah. Well, it's just weird to me. Like, I'm fine with them be like, I don't know. It's just the way that it is. The callback is painted as like an extreme option that I was like, that's pretty normal actually.
Yeah. Super normal.
And also the fact that they're like, we want you to sing a song that is also not appropriate for Maria.
Yeah.
Sing this song from Fame. And then they invite the whole student body as if it's freaking the callbacks from High School Musical.
Which, hear me out, I love that. The way that Puck is like, this is great, like Clash of the Titans up here. I was like, that is so funny. I would show up to that immediately. I love how the whole Glee Club is just like, horny for a diva off. They love mm-hmm. that shit. And you know what? I do too. Mm-hmm. I do too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do you want to talk about the callback song?
Sure. I'd love to. I was even watching it today and I think it's framed that like Mercedes does better at the song, but the way that it's filmed is like, oh, this song is a duet. I forgot that it was a competition. So I think it's like to the song's detriment. Like I'm not mm-hmm. really comparing them. I'm just like seeing a duet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Catch my drift?
Yes.
But do you think that like, who would you pick out of those two after that callback?
I don't think there was a clear winner for me. And I also think a big issue is it's an, not a Maria song.
Yeah.
And so it was hard for me to be like, this one would be a better Maria. Because it's like, I don't know. They both have lovely voices. Mm-hmm. That, The whole thing was hard for me. And this whole episode, I was trying to be like, if I was casting West Side Story, once again, everyone, it should not be done like this. But if I was casting West Side Story at McKinley and we were just being like, anyone can play Maria, which one of these two would I cast? What are your thoughts on that based on what we have seen in the last two episodes?
I think I would. I think I would cast Mercedes personally because I don't think that Rachel did any better on those, on her audition pieces or during the callback than Mercedes. And I just think that the only reason that that Rachel would like get the part over Mercedes is because like she like looks like Natalie Wood. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And everyone's like, Rachel is Maria. Not because like she's got like something over Mercedes, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think I would have casted Mercedes.
I, based on their auditions, have no idea who I would have cast. Because like Mercedes' audition told me that she was fabulously talented, but it didn't necessarily tell me that she could play Maria. And so I would just have a callback where I was like, sing a Maria song. But the moment that we got into Emma's office and we're talking to both of them and Rachel's attitude during that whole part where they're like, we want to do a callback. And Rachel makes a comment about how, well, they just want to make it seem more professional. Mm-hmm. Like they gave other people a shot before they give the role to me.
Yeah.
I, as an educator, would have thought I'm not giving her the part.
Yeah. And I think, frankly, as an educator, I don't know that I could ever interact with a student like Rachel, you know, in the way that they even have like cut scenes in Spotlight where it's like Will and Rachel, like being buddy buddy and fun. And like Rachel gets away with so much shit. And then Mercedes has a stomach bug and can't do a very hard dance move. And it's like, Mercedes is lazy and doesn't work hard and doesn't give a shit about nationals.
And she tells Will, he's like, do the dance. And she's like, I can't, my ankle hurts. And he says, well, push through it.
That's, it's like, are you kidding me?
That's not how dance works. That's how you break your ankle and literally can't dance ever again.
Exactly.
Will.
Yeah. And like the bit where Mercedes is like, when she goes to Rachel and says, like, Rachel, tell me you are better than me.
Mm-hmm.
And then she says, like, why is everyone so afraid to hurt her feelings? Mm-hmm. And it's like, seriously, why? No one even answers the question. And that's something that bothers me just about this show in general, is they keep posing these questions without answering that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we walk away from this and Rachel is the lead of the show. Rachel is Maria in the show, and she goes on to do the part, you know, like, and she goes on to be the lead of this television show until it ends, you know, like these questions are definitely posed, but they're never answered.
Something that really bothers me about this plot line is we have this plot line of Mercedes being like, I'm just as talented as Rachel. Why does she get all the recognition? Which is a fantastic plot. It's also a plot we've seen three times before, yes, and nothing has ever changed.
No.
It is just like every time they need a Mercedes episode, they're like, okay, Mercedes is jealous of Rachel because she never gets a spotlight and that'll hold her over for the rest of the season. And it's like, well, if you gave her more screen time, you wouldn't have to keep going back to the same well.
Or if they would have made Mercedes the lead of the show and then carried on with this Rachel going for class president thing.
But hear me out.
Hearing you.
I like the Mercedes plot this time because it doesn't just end at this episode.
I hear that. And it goes on to her joining Shelby's club.
That she quits the club and she goes and joins Shelby's club. And then I also, as we've mentioned, I like when Rachel is a crappy person as long as the show is aware that she's being crappy. It's when she gets rewarded for it that it bothers me. And I also like this plot line of like Rachel was really threatened about Maria, so she betrayed Kurt's trust and went against him for class president. Mm-hmm. And then Kurt's like, great, you got Maria. so are you going to drop out now? And then she is like so competitive and worried about her future that she's like, no, I'm not going to. And it is an absolutely like very rude, backstabby thing for her to do. Mm-hmm. But the show is aware of that and very much frames it in that way, that it is like Rachel's favorite sin is to value her ambition over her relationships, and she's doing it again. So I actually, this interaction, I really like that we have this plot line and that Rachel ends up being Maria, because it leads A, to Rachel having to fess up to the fact that she's not going to drop out of the race just because she got the part. Yeah. She is so ambitious that she is willing to completely betray Kurt's friendship to get into a good college.
Right.
And then it also leads to Mercedes joining Shelby's show choir and that whole plot that we will talk about in the future.
Right. I get that. I just like miss. I just wish that Mercedes had a better time on the show.
Yeah. But this is, hear me out, this is the beginning of probably the strongest Mercedes run in the entire show. Like, this plot is the jumping off point for, and I mean, it still is not what Amber Riley deserves.
No.
But it is the strongest storyline and most screen time and spotlight that Mercedes gets on this show up to this point.
Yeah. Man. What'd you think of Who Run the World, Girls?
I loved it. It was so fun.
Right?
It was so fun. Hear me out.
The only flash mob I'm cool with. I was like, why am I loving this? It's girl. It's because it's a girl power flash mob. And after, I think I put myself in the shoes of a McKinley High student. She's got my vote immediately.
I know.
Literally.
Fantastic.
If I saw that, she'd be like, oh, got it. Mm-hmm. I'm on your squad now, you know?
Yeah.
I loved it.
She also tells Kurt that because boys have been president, the school's gone down the magical poop stealing water chair.
Oh, that. You guys know, Brittany S. Pierce is a show. I love her. I love her so much. I loved that.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. No, I truly like, I've said this before, the reason that Ian Brennan is my favorite writer is because I feel like he really gets these characters, and his stories are always very character relationship focused.
Yeah.
And I feel like every part of this episode is so strong in these characters' relationships, that you have like this Mercedes and Rachel tension that we've always had that comes to a point, and then you have this newfound friendship with Rachel and Kurt, and Kurt used to really hate Rachel because she was so ambitious and off-putting, and then he sees that side of her come out again and it damages their friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you also see Kurt being so threatened by Brittany because Brittany is like so cool and popular, and she is like clearly doing so well in this run for president. I don't know. I think all of the plot of this episode is very strong.
I hear that.
Yeah.
Do you have any more thoughts on this episode?
I got a few randos.
All right. Tell me your randos.
One is Shelby Corcoran has exactly two lines in this episode. And yet, since she is the devil, she, even with her limited screen time, manages to completely destroy a person's self-confidence.
She is such a fucking bitch.
She is talking to Beast. Beast is being very nice, just like sitting, making conversation with her. And then Shelby's like, anyways, I gotta go. This is a direct quote. Enjoy your enormous bowl of disgusting creamy pasta leaves. This woman is supposed to be like someone we like.
Yeah.
How? What on earth?
How?
Like, way to make Beast absolutely feel terrible with that exiting remark.
Luckily, goodness Coach sakes. Beast is like, you know, hard as nails and didn't even notice.
Gosh.
Oh my gosh. I love when Coach Beast calls Mercedes Stealth Attack Jones. It's so funny.
Also, they say some things to Mike that I was like, that just like, if they were said to me, would make me feel very bad about myself.
I know.
He goes to audition for Riff, and Emma's like, you know this isn't just a dancing part, right? Like, yeah, he freaking knows, Emma. He's about to sing a song.
Yeah, he's about to sing.
That, especially because Mike has been so self-conscious about his voice, was probably so nervous to sing. And then Emma's like, hey, we know you're tone deaf, so you're aware you'd have to sing if you got cast as this, right? Come on, Emma.
And then freaking Coach Beast is like, I hope he didn't waste your time. And it's like, He just finished singing, coach. God damn it.
Well, he had this whole, his whole arc this episode was about how his dad tells him that dance is a waste of time. And then he literally does this amazing dance number and Beast is like, well, I hope you teaching that dance to football players wasn't a waste of time.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's kind of like one of those things where in your English class in high school, you're always like reading the books that somehow like go along with what is going on in your life. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But somehow like your teacher always says like that thing that you know is going to like hurt you. Do you know what I mean?
I am aware that that happens. I don't know if it ever happened to me.
It happened to me all the time. English class was really frustrating to me.
Also, another Will thought.
Tell me your Will thought.
In booty camp, Mercedes confronts Will, like we already talked about. She says, like, where is Rachel? Why is Rachel not here? And he's like, because Finn's like, because she practices. Sure, I'd like to see it. Rachel is no better dancer than half the kids in there.
Exactly.
And then Mercedes like says all these things to Will that are so valid and like so warranted where she's like, we all, which is stuff that we've been saying on this podcast for however many months we've been doing like 10 months now, about like, Rachel is so clearly your favorite. Why does she get absolutely everything she wants? We have all been sitting in the background. She always gets the spotlight. Will, because he's a terrible educator, accepts absolutely zero responsibility for any of it. Instead of being like, Mercedes, I see your point. Your attitude right now is out of line, but I do like see the point you're making.
Absolutely.
He's just like, you know what, Mercedes? You're kicked out of the club. Like, Will, look at the stats. How many times has Mercedes sung at a competition? Zero, except for like holding a note at the end. And Rachel has sung, what, like 5 or 6 times? It's just annoying. He accepts absolutely no responsibility for anything.
I hate that guy.
He's the worst. On an opposite note, on men in the show who are wonderful, Kurt going up to Blaine and giving him flowers.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you brought that up. One of my favorite moments of all time. Especially because like, God, I've dated people in theater before. That shit is hard. And it's especially hard to like see them succeed when you're not succeeding. And you know what? The bigger a bigger person would be excited for your partner. Mm-hmm. And like, Kurt, like, let himself, like, have a pity party. He mourned the loss of that part, which I think was appropriate. And then he, like, just fucking supported his boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And I'm so proud of him.
And especially because last episode really made it seem like, well, even Blaine says to Kurt, he's like, you always zig when I think you're about to zag, which is kind of a dumb line. But the sentiment is nice that the end of last episode really made it seem like this was going to, like, cause relationship trouble for them.
Yeah.
That we watched Kurt watching Blaine audition and he was so sad about it. And it is so nice and refreshing, especially in an episode where, you know, like Rachel and Will are being very toxic people, to see Kurt just be so happy for Blaine and congratulate him and is wonderful. Yeah, it's very nice.
Proud of him.
The best. That's all my thoughts.
I think that's all my thoughts too.
Cool.
Doom, doom, doom.
Best part, worst part.
Boom.
Ian, what was your best part of this episode?
My best part of this episode was best number. It's all over, man.
I hear ya.
A great time. Puck, are you in on this with them too? Come on. Best part. I truly think this is such a strong episode. I think all, like, the character dynamics and the relationships are so fascinating and exciting.
Yeah.
Best part would probably just the fact that it is drama based on a High School Musical, because all theater kids have been there.
I eat that shit up.
The audition process for your High School Musical is the most dramatic time of year. It's absolutely terrifying.
It's the most dramatic time
of the year. So,
seriously,
just them actually like going to the story well of very real theater kid high school experiences instead of what they usually do, which is like, I don't know, what if everyone got high and dreamed about Britney Spears? I just appreciated like them going to like a very relatable story idea.
Absolutely.
What about you?
I think my favorite number in the episode was probably Run the World Girls.
Mm-hmm.
I hate a flash mob, but I love a girl power one. I think my favorite part of the episode, I love the Mike plot.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of, I know what it's like to be a theater kid and have like, you know, parents not really like get it. You know, I definitely... My parents, thank God, never like told me to quit my club. Thank God. But I relate to, you know, wanting to be an artist. And, I appreciated this plot a lot. Yeah. And I remember appreciating it a lot growing up as well.
Yeah.
I think in any theater kid's life, there comes a turning point of like, is this like a fun hobby that I want to like, that I love, but like, it's definitely not like the thing I want to like pursue, or is this like my job? And, I remember having those conversations with myself as watching this episode, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate, and I just love Mike so much. And I love his rage dancing. Oh my gosh. Just, I am obsessed with it. Yeah. What was your worst part of the episode?
Worst part? Probably all the racist jokes.
Absolutely.
And then if we're going for like a worst part plot-wise, the fact that Will, for the first time ever, has... a storyline where he learns like maybe I shouldn't just always try to fix other people.
Yeah.
And then he immediately sings a song about how I'm going to try and fix this person.
Yep. 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 Yep.
What about you?
Agree on the racist jokes, like especially the jokes that are absolutely undercut by racism, like mm-hmm. the jokes that start out as solid jokes alone and then are absolutely ruined. And it sucks to me that along the lines of, you know, me saying that my favorite part is the Mike plot, it's also deeply rooted in racism against Asian people. And that fucking sucks. And it's not fun to watch. And it, you know, I can't, mm-hmm. It really pisses me off. Yeah, that's probably my worst part. I also, God, I'm sick of this whole, like, Mercedes is so lazy thing. It bothers me to no end. Like, it sucks to me that, like, the main consistency in Mercedes' character is that she's plus size and she's, like, lazy. Mm-hmm. I'm, like, so over that. Oh, my God. Any hoosers?
There's no assignment.
Well, how about we make our assignment? What would you assign to a callback
for Maria?
That's not a song from the show.
That's not a song from the show.
Or yeah,
that's more exciting. You are correct. I just now I have to think about it.
Not a song. Oh, gosh, I've got an answer.
I think I have an answer too.
Okay, what's your answer?
Okay. Oh gosh. I had a hard time. I'm not very familiar with the Soprano songbook. I would do either Goodnight My Someone from The Music
Man.
Very
good, very good.
Or I would do I Could Have Danced All Night from My Fair Lady.
Very good.
What about you?
Maybe it's because I got Fantastics on the mind recently. I think either some sort of cut of They Were You Much More from Fantastics. Feels very Maria, feels very young. Like I want for more, like, you know.
Fantastics is just Romeo and Juliet.
Exactly.
But the Montagues and Capulets are in on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just West Side Story, but not at all.
With act one is West Side Story, and then act two is like, what if that had a happy ending and then everyone got bored?
Yeah, exactly.
I God. Love the Fantastics.
You guys, if you don't know the Fantastics, check it out.
It's so good.
It's incredible.
It
I would
has
check
its
out
problems.
Ew, absolutely. I would check out good. A newer version. You know, there's
been some rewrites in the show that I think are necessary. Mm-hmm. So I would, if you haven't heard of it before, go check out the 2006 version. I wouldn't look at any other version.
Is that the Santino Fontana version?
Yes. Oh.
Anyways, whoo! All right. Woo-hoo-hoo! That's, what's this episode called? Oh, Asian F.
That's right.
That's right.
We were watching the episode today and it got to the point where it was Mike Chang Sr. and Jr. in the office with Principal Figgins. And I went, oh, that's this episode. Mm-hmm. Gosh.
Also, hear me out.
Hearing you.
Mrs. Chang's a very good actor.
I know. She's also beautiful.
She is. Good for her.
In that moment with them dancing. So mm-hmm. sweet.
Which originally, because he's like, I could teach you how to dance. And then he starts waltzing with her. And I was like, Mike, I feel like she probably knows how to waltz.
But it's also just a sweet moment.
But then it was very tender. And I was like, okay, I get behind this now.
Sure.
Anyways, if you have thoughts on this episode, send them to us. Voicemail, anchor.fm/recoveringgleek. Email recoveringgleek@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Also, we have a subreddit now, started by a friend of the podcast, Sam. Check out r/recoveringgleek on Reddit.
You can follow our Instagram at recoveringgleek_podcast. You can follow us on TikTok at the same handle. And then you can follow us on Twitter at recoveringgleek.
Wow, wow.
If you want to follow Ian, you can follow him too if you want.
You have to do your own detective work for that, though.
Yeah, you have to chat. You have to look if far you want to
follow Lena, also detective work?
Sure.
Great. You have to really
We've never
want
said
it.
Our own social media handles on the podcast, which to me now feels like we're taking a stance.
Well, my thing is, anyone is welcome to follow me. I can't promise that I'll post anything. Like our podcast Instagram, we like post every week.
Yeah.
But my personal one, I'm like, if I feel like posting something, I'll post it. If I don't, I won't. So I make
you're
no promises.
You're so funny about that social media thing, but you're also like so social media hashtag famous because you go viral constantly.
What can I say?
Did you make a deal with the devil?
I did. I called Ryan Murphy on the phone. I said, make me go viral, baby.
You go viral more often than I would like. Sometimes people talk about how viral you go and you're not in the room and I'm like, yeah, it pisses me off. I'm like, I probably shouldn't be that mean about my friend when he's not even here. It's never mean. Love you lots.
Love you too.
But thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Happy you're here. You guys are the best in the whole world. Seriously. Love to hear from you. Hope you have a good day, a great rest of your week. Wear your sunscreen. Stay hydrated.
Yeah.
And here is a kiss on your forehead.
Bye.
See you later.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.
When the dance was done.
When the... What is it?
When I went my way. When I tried to find rainbows far away. All the lights,
I don't know these words.
Lights. Oh, it seemed to fade from view.
They were you. They were you. They were you.
Without you near me, I can't see. When you're near me, wonderful things come to be. Every secret prayer, every fancy free,
everything I dared for both you and me.
All my wildest dreams multiplied by two.
They were you.
They were you.
They were you. They were you.
They were you.
They were you.
They were you.
Thank you.
So if anyone wants to cast the Fantastics
for Madame Luisa and the Fantastics, you can contact us or coveringgleek@gmail.com. Thank you very much.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.